Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us. As I mentioned earlier, we're joined this month's masterclass with Mary Bowling. You know her. She's been with Search Engine News for quite a while. She's our resident in-house local SEO expert. She has got a great presentation today on attracting and engaging local searchers, specifically with the focus on local best practice content practices. So she's going to be talking about how she uses actionable tips to create and optimize local content for a specific local focus. So without any further ado, Mary, I'm going to turn it over to you. Let's get going.
All right. Thank you, Casey. Thanks, everyone, for attending today. As Casey says, I'm going to talk about local content today, and I'm specifically concerned with content that's going to attract searchers to your local business website and then engage them when they get there. And we've all been told over and over again that content is king. And content can be king if you do it right. Unfortunately, when Google really began filtering out the positive effects of a lot of the spammy tactics that used to work really well for us, especially when Google came out with link penalties, a lot of not very good SEOs started cranking out content just for content's sake. It's like they didn't even know what else to do. They keep hearing that content is king, so they just keep creating content. And now we have a lot of content that belongs in the toilet. And there's so much bad content out there that now Google is really focusing on trying to filter a lot of that crapola content out of its index. We've all seen it. This is content that's written by contractors that are paid by the word or paid 10 bucks an hour. They do searches on the internet about a topic, and then they take it and combine it. The stuff that they find on places like Wikipedia or WebMD or even non-authoritative sites, and they just combine it and rewrite it into a page for a local plumber or a dentist, and it's not useful to users of the website of that local business. These folks are not really the experts in your business's niche. They have no expertise in the business's location. And there's no way you can ask them to, say, write 500 words around a set of terms and get expert content out of them. What we really want to do is focus on localized expertise of the people in a local company so that when somebody reads a page on their site, they come away convinced that this business knows what they're doing. They do a good job, and they can be trusted to do a good job for me too. And a big part of demonstrating that you are the expert on your topic in your geographic area is by making that localized expertise very evident to them. For example, if you were charged with theft in San Francisco, and you needed a lawyer, if you read this page, it goes a really long way in demonstrating that this law firm's expertise is in helping people with your problem in your location. It talks about specific California penal codes that apply to theft. It talks about what the legal process is like in cases like these, what you can expect to happen. And it specifically shows how they've helped others in that situation and talks about what these particular attorneys can do to help you. So this is the exact kind of information that someone charged with theft in the Bay Area wants to know. And the lawyers at the firm have this knowledge. This is the kind of content we should all be working on for local business websites. It can also help to provide some local resources around your niche on your website. And while this is not necessarily expert content, it is highly localized content, and it can help to engage people once they get to your site. And it can keep them coming back to take advantage of your resource over and over again. the transportation company on the left here, they mostly move people around between the Denver airport and people that want to go skiing in the Colorado ski areas. So they have a lot of resources on the site about the ski areas, about getting to the ski areas, about what to do once you get there. And they've put it together in a really pleasing way that's useful for people. In this other example on the right, this is a daily pollen report that a Cleveland allergist pretty much takes up his whole homepage with. But you know what? If you live in Cleveland and you have an allergy, this is really of interest to you. And he gets a lot of traffic every day, not just from his own patients, but from other people in the Cleveland area that suffer from allergies and want to see what they're in for the day. Of course, you know, it's easy to say create expert content. But the big question is, how do we get that local expertise out of the minds of the experts that we have at these local businesses and get it onto their website in some form? With some professions, like the lawyers I showed you, it's not that hard. They know how to write. They generally don't mind writing. In fact, some of them you can't get them to stop writing. But that's not always the case. Sometimes we have businesses where writing might not be in their skill set. Maybe a car repair shop or a carpet cleaner or a plumber who just doesn't feel comfortable writing anything or being in the public eye. And you can't really get local expert content without the local experts. So the experts have to be committed to helping you help them. And I always impress on prospective clients that they need to take an active role in their online marketing. And when I take the time to explain why to them, they totally get it. Sometimes I have to use the mind eraser and tell them to forget everything they've ever heard about keyword density and content and SEO and just think about giving me information that's going to be useful to their website visitors and their prospective customers. Sometimes it's, you know, really takes a long involved discussion with them about how this can work and who's going to do what and who's going to be responsible for what. And you know, getting a commitment for people to meet their deadlines when they're given. Without that buy-in from the business, I'm rarely going to take on a new local client these days, because it is really almost impossible to come up with true, useful, localized expert content without getting it from the people that are the experts in that location. After I get some buy-in, I like to start with the business's story. Without that story about that business and that location, all your content is pretty much doomed to being generic and totally uninteresting and unuseful. So I get on the phone, or I get a writer to get on the phone with the owner or the manager and chat for quite a while. I would say at least an hour with the owner or manager and learn everything they can about the company. You know, of course you want to ask things about why the business was started and what's different about it, who the people behind it are and what their story is, how they got into the business, you know, what kind of training and experience they have. But it also helps to get some anecdotes to ask things like, what's the worst thing that ever happened to you when you were trying to fix someone's plumbing? And to get some humanity, some reality, and some of the personality of the business and the people in the business for the writer to learn that from them. And you really have to make sure that whoever is interviewing them, whether you're doing it yourself or you're having someone else do it, that they're asking local questions. For example, if you were talking to a veterinarian, you'd ask them about what are the best dog parks in your town? What's the risk of heartworm disease in your area of the country? So the the interviewer really needs to guide the discussion and get that local information out of the experts' heads. And in a lot of cases, you don't just want to talk to the owner or manager. In fact, a lot of times it's easier for the owner or manager to assign someone else to talk to you than it is for them to find time themselves to talk to you. So take advantage of talking to any of the people involved in the company's day-to-day interactions with customers and prospects. And, you know, salespeople are going to be able to tell you what people's buying objections are. The customer service people are going to be able to tell you what problems people tend to have. The receptionist and the call center are going to be able to tell you what questions people ask most frequently. So they all have valuable information in their heads, and I wouldn't turn down an interview with any of them. And you might need to build a team in order to make this transition from the expert's knowledge to the website become a reality. And if you, the bigger the business is and the more locations they have, the more people you're probably going to need on your team. With a little local business, I can usually get away with just either myself or a writer and the expert. But with a big brand, I'm going to need to get a graphic designer involved, a photographer. I might even need a videographer to be on the content team with me. And do whatever's easiest for your client and their people. For some people, it's going to be talking on the phone. Other people are going to write for you. Some of them, they might be able to take videos and show you different things and talk while behind that video to send information to you. And for some of them, they can just use a voice recording and record their thoughts and send it to you to get it spiffed up and put on the website. And make sure that you're letting them do it whenever it's easiest for them to do it. I actually had a dermatologist who used to record information that we turned into blog posts while she was sitting in her hot tub, because that's when she could relax and think about it and be uninterrupted, and she gave us some really good content that way. So if you have somebody that wants to talk to you on the phone while they're driving in the car to work every day, or wants to record, use a recorder to record their thoughts while they're walking between the holes on a golf course, do it. Take whatever you can get as far as help from your experts in getting that content. And recording is really easy. There are free voice recorder apps for both iPhones and Androids that are going to let you record really long messages. And kind of as a bonus from getting information in this form is that it uses natural speech patterns, which is the direction that we want to go into for the voice search that we're rapidly moving into. And I found that this product from Google Keep that I hadn't heard before until I had the need for something like this makes it really easy to collaborate on these content projects. You can even add photos to them, put lists, reminders in there. It's very functional and will do a lot to help you collaborate with other people and keep the information straight. So now I'm going to talk about some of the content tactics that I've found over the years that are going to work for nearly all local businesses, regardless of what industry they're in. And these are what I would generally consider to be the low-hanging fruit in local search right now, and mostly because most of our competitors are not doing these things. And, you know, what we really want to do is maximize our attraction from the search results. And the reason we want to do that, of course, is it gives us more opportunities to turn searchers into new leads for our business. then after we get these searchers to our site, we want them to call us, or we want them to give us their email address, or give us their phone number so that we can call them. And most cases, that means we're going to have to convince them that we know what we're doing, that we can help them with their problem, whatever that happens to be. And it means we have to engage them with the content on our site. If we can do that, Google's local algorithms are going to reward us with better rankings. That's going to give us the opportunity to get in front of even more searchers and get even more new leads. The first thing that is really a quick win and that I strongly encourage everyone to do is to carefully review your titles and tags. Yes, I know this is a very basic aspect of SEO, but it's also one that people tend to do once and then forget about it. They cross it off the list. They never go back and look at them again. Or in some places, the most junior people in an agency are the ones that are writing these titles and tags. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're awesome. You know, if an inexperienced person is the one that's responsible for these. So think about increasing these and think about writing these, and remember that they're not all about trying to rank, but here are a couple of examples of how doing nothing more than improving the page title, meta description, and H1 tag or headline on pages substantially increased rankings over the course of 4 to 5 months. We've gone from 50 plus to 9, 4, 10. Those are pretty significant moves just by improving the page titles and meta descriptions. To me, that was astounding. And this certainly isn't, you know, there certainly isn't a huge increase when you, this is for the first example that I showed you there. There's certainly not a huge amount of traffic to this page, even though they're ranking better. But you can see their traffic is much, much better than it was a year ago. And all it took was, you know, 10 to 15 minutes of effort. If you take little numbers like these and multiply them over 20 or 50 or 100 pages, it can really bring you a significant increase in traffic to your site. So don't ignore updating your titles and tags. They can help with your rankings and your traffic. Also, think about what the searchers are seeing. If you are searching for a DUI attorney in the Washington, D.C. area, these are some of the results that you might see. Which one of them would you choose? The first one pretty much berates you for your actions. I certainly wouldn't want him representing me in court. The second one, he doesn't show any empathy at all to the situation. Only talks about the law firm, not the person with the problem. It's we, we, we. The third one exhibits some empathy. They offer me a free consultation, and they display the phone number. Personally, that's the one I would choose. And I might not even look at the website because I have the number now, and I can just call them. So this is the kind of results that you want searchers to see. With large brands, do not assume anything. Sometimes they have the worst titles and tags and need the most attention of any of the sites out there. Here are a couple of big brands that absolutely fail at this. And note that the lower one is actually for the home page of a big brand, and it says welcome to the home page. There's no telling how long this has been up on the site, but it can certainly benefit from some improvement. Here's a decent ad for an air conditioning repair business in Austin. Not too bad. It kind of builds up your confidence in them, tells you what they do, gives you a little call to action, and shows their phone number. But if you compare that to their paid ad that appears on the same page, it's really lacking. Look at this paid ad. It offers a couple of discounts, a free energy audit, no financing costs, and it shows that they have a good Better Business Bureau rating. There really is no reason why that organic result or free ad can't offer at least some of these things to searchers in the results. So learn from your paid ads, and also learn from the paid ads that your competitors are putting out there and that businesses like yours are doing in really competitive locations. And don't be afraid to test your titles and tags and try different things to learn what's most interesting to searchers in your area, what's going to get those people to click on your pages rather than your competitors' pages. And make sure that you use your title and meta description to tell searchers where you are located and where you do business. In many industries, this is pretty standard now, but there are still some industries where you look at the search engine results and you have no idea where those businesses are located. So make sure that if you don't put it in the page title, that you will put it in the meta description. But don't make people guess where you're located or force them to go to your site to find out where you're located. Chances are they're just going to click on something that's obviously in the location that they're more interested in. And remember that you only have 3 seconds to grab a searcher's attention once they've landed on your page. So make sure that your headlines clearly relate to what the search result indicated what was going to be on that page. Make sure that the free ad that you put in the search results, when they land on that page, that that's what that page is about, and make sure that they can tell from the headline that that is what that page is going to be about. That's going to keep a lot of searchers from bouncing away. Use structured markup for everything it can be used for. This is the only way you can get rich snippets in the search engine results. That's it. You've got to use structured schema markup. The search engines, and now a lot of apps, are going to continue to use schema for more and more types of information as we move into the future. So make sure that you are taking advantage of the ones that make sense for a local business to take advantage of. Right now, we've got events, we've got menus, we've got product listings, we've got review schema, but there's going to be a lot more coming down the road. And make sure that you're taking advantage of that. Then think about beefing up the content on your homepage. This particular example is, you know, obviously lacking any meaningful content. It's hard to believe that a plastic surgeon, which is a very competitive industry, would have a homepage that looks like this. The more competitive your industry and location are, the more long-form content on your homepage is going to help you. And here's an example of another law firm. This is their homepage, and it helps them to rank for a lot of valuable terms related to their type of law practice, which is criminal defense. Now, I know we all have to deal with designers and CEOs and marketing managers who want very spare homepage as far as content is concerned. They want something that's really clean and open looking. But there are ways that you can use the above the fold area to keep them happy while still placing a lot of content on the page. And this example, this is not too much content to put on your homepage if you really want to rank for competitive terms in a competitive location. One of the best habits that you can get into is doing a content audit on your sites and then creating and following a master content plan. I start this by doing a crawl so I can get all the URLs, and then I organize them and I look at all of the pages. I know what the page is about and whether it's okay or whether I should do something to it. You know, sometimes that means removing it or combining it or improving it. And then I can prioritize my actions and get to work once I have this audit done. And one of the best ways to check the overall engagement of your site is to look in Google Analytics. And there's a report under behavior that kind of gives you this broad picture of the engagement on your site. And this site is pretty bad. 75% of the sessions were for 10 seconds or less. Those are pages that definitely need some help. And looking at the pages that people spend a long time on, that's going to help you to figure out what kinds of information the searchers in your area are actually interested in so that you can try to make more of your content more interesting and useful for them. It's a real quick win to combine related thin content into one stronger page. When you look at pages that don't have very much content on them, you know, the real question in your mind should be, why does this page deserve to rank? What is it about this page that's going to make Google think that it's better than the other pages out there on this same topic? And most of the time, you can't really find an answer for that. So it's better to take related content that's about the same sort of thing. In this example, it might be about related content that you combine might be typical things that cause people to need emergency dental care being combined onto this page that are going to help it be a stronger page that can possibly rank for this term that's really quite profitable for a lot of dentists. Then think about removing unneeded content from really cluttered pages. Some of the things that we see on local sites are really of very little interest to searchers. They're really distractions and they don't contribute much to the purpose of the site. In this example, it was an urgent care clinic where about half of the content on the site, on the home page, was removed. And this shows that the increase in unique visitors from mobile was pretty astounding. But this doesn't always work, so you really need to test it. In this case, you know, you can see how an urgent care clinic, that mobile is very important for them, and that paring down the content that the corporate kind of pushed onto this site and said, we need this on the home page. Once that was removed and we got down to the content that people really need and want when they're looking for an urgent care clinic, when we made that very clear to them on the home page is when they got this boost in traffic. So sometimes removing content is what you should be doing rather than adding content. Now, some of the quickest improvements that you can see are when you take a page that's ranking or getting a relatively large amount of traffic already and then improve it so that people stay on the site longer. In this example, this was the third most popular landing page on a site. It has a bounce rate of 94%. This is a prime candidate for improvement. Over a month, over 1,200 people landed on this page and then bounced away. If we can improve that and keep them on the site, keep them on that page longer and move them around the site, we have a lot better chance of turning them into customers. Then look at the pages that are converting best. You know, those are pretty important for us, and think about how you can get them ranking higher. And when you're looking at pages that are converting the best, don't forget to look at the landing pages and the funnels that eventually end up in a conversion. And don't forget to look at your pay-per-click landing pages, because those can help you to make better organic pages as well. This is my triage for improvement. It's generally the order in which I work on my content master plan. First, I look at the pages that are ranking well. The ones on pages 2 to 3 are going to be the easiest to push up onto page 1. I look at the pages that lead to the most conversions. Then I deal with the ones that should be combined with others. I take care of the ones that are really not optimized at all. And then it's only then that I'm going to begin filling in gaps in the site's content with new pages or worry about new content ideas for the site. And sometimes just improving the content that's already on the site is all that you're going to need initially, that you don't need to automatically jump in and start creating a lot of new content if you can make the pages that they already have better and work for them better. And as far as boosting rankings, when we get down to number 4, that can be pretty hard for an internal page, but it's pretty easy to use your internal linking to shoot more page authority to particular pages that you would like to have ranked better, and use good anchor text to point more pages towards it. And you can then improve on-page optimization, and if that doesn't do the trick, then think about adding more content or better content. And lastly, if you are still not able to rank those pages, that's when you need to start thinking about how can I possibly get some external links pointing to the page. Another way a lot of local websites hurt themselves is by talking about themselves instead of displaying pathological empathy. And this is a term I learned from Anne Hanley, who's a usability expert. And she really coaches us to focus relentlessly on the user. And I say focus relentlessly on the user. Think about your website and the content on your site as to how useful is it to the user. They really don't care about how wonderful you are. So the easiest way to do this, to focus relentlessly on the user, is to pretend like you're writing for one particular person and use your content to show them that you understand what their problem is and that you empathize with it, and then tell them how you can help them resolve their problem. There's way too many websites out there that are all about the business and not all about the user. In this particular example, the alligator on the left has a picture of him holding his violin and a recording of him playing the violin on his homepage. There might be a handful of people in his market area who are going to be impressed with this. Maybe a couple of them have allergies, but the reality is no one really cares whether their allergist plays the violin well or not. They want to know how they can get relief from allergies. So read the content that is on the site that your sites that you're responsible for, and make sure that it is really focused on the user and it's not all about the business itself. And one of the easiest ways to do this is to look and see how many times do they talk about you and how many times do they talk about we. So check all of your content and see if it needs to be refocused. And especially on older, larger sites, there can be content that was written by many, many different authors. And you're going to get different voices in different areas of the site. So that's why you need to really check all the content and read all of the content to see if it's user-focused or if it is business-focused. If you're a big brand, act like a big brand. Google says in its Search Quality Evaluator guidelines that it expects websites of large companies and organizations to put a great deal of effort into creating a good user experience. Putting essentially the same content on all of your location landing pages does not demonstrate that you're putting any effort into it. You know, sales are taking place at the locations of these big brands, and they really need to support those locations with good, useful, unique content that's all about that location and is useful to visitors. And if you're in a situation where you have a brand that is unwilling to do this, then I strongly encourage you to get permission to run a small test where you can prove to them how much you can improve their rankings and traffic on location pages by improving the content on those pages. And then you can get some more resources to do a larger test and possibly expand it to all of their locations. Brands, sometimes with brands, there's so many people involved in making decisions that you need to just snatch on to somebody's coattail, get them to champion your projects, get them to help you get the budget you need to do some tests, and then prove to them that what you're suggesting actually works. And if you're a small business, then don't try to act like a big brand. Instead, make it clear that you have all the attributes that people value when they're dealing with a small local merchant. And there are a lot of people who would prefer to deal with someone like this garage door one-man shop than they would with a really big brand like Overhead Doors. So it's really worthwhile to express the things that really represent your business. And when you're a big brand, that's going to be flashiness and bells and whistles. But with a little brand, it's not. It's going to be that you're a genuine, accessible person who's well-trusted and is going to talk directly to people. So use that to your advantage if you're a little brand. It's also very worthwhile to try to influence review content. And so I'm not talking about faking reviews or getting somebody to write reviews for you. I'm talking about trying to get people to put terms within their reviews that are going to help you to rank for those terms. And, you know, even people who want to give you a review can be rather reluctant. How many times have you heard, "I don't know what to say," when you say, "Would you mind writing a review for me?" So you can provide them with suggestions. And you can provide them with a list of suggestions if you'd like. And most people are going to take those suggestions and run with them. It gives them a starting place for writing a review and telling people about the experience they had with your business. You can say, give them suggestions like tell people where you live if you're somebody who services people at their homes. You can encourage them to tell them who helped you if you have professionals in your business that people might be searching for by name. Tell them to explain what they bought or what service was provided. And you can do this in various ways, and not just one way, but multiple ways. You can do it with a handout. You can put a page on your website. You can make a personal suggestion when you're talking to them, or you can do it in the email you send them out after they've done business with you. And having location and product or service terms in the reviews that people write about you are going to help you rank for those terms. So those are the things that I try to encourage people to talk about in reviews about businesses. Then, you know, depending on what kind of business you have, you think about optimizing your key people, Here's an example where a doctor who's part of an 11-doctor practice manages to rank where the practice does not. He's ranking number one in the local pack. That's pretty darn valuable for that practice. And in some, you know, in some instances, the person, the professional person that someone is engaging is really, they really want to know more about them before they make a selection of who they're going to go to. For example, if you're going to let somebody do LASIK surgery on your eyeballs, you probably want to make sure that it's somebody that's very experienced, like this doctor. You know, this is another place where it could be very boring to read a very long resume about a professional in your business. But if you're somebody who's trying to decide what doctor or what lawyer or what accountant they're going to, it may not be boring at all to them. It might be exactly what they want to see. You also want to tell people how much things cost. Optimize for this and make it clear on your site, because that is a huge question that people have. If you do keyword research for just about any local business, you are going to find that there are a lot of people searching for terms around price, cost, how much, regardless of what it happens to be. So be the one that gives them that information. I did some research for, I think it was furnace repair in Columbus, Ohio. And this is what the ranking pages look like. Hardly any of them really gave any concrete information about what something is going to cost. These were just the best results that Google could find for that query in that area. So it'd be really easy by putting up a page that really talked about the prices and the cost of furnace repair to rank well in this particular market. Then it's time to start, it's really time to start doing ongoing user testing if you haven't been doing this already. This is a really good guide to usability testing. It talks about what it is and the different types and what they can tell you. So it's a good resource if you're just getting started. And one of the easiest things to test are calls to action. This is something you can easily split test even without any special software. And unbelievably, it can have a really significant improvement in people doing what you're asking them to do if you can find the right calls to action for your particular website. And these are some resources that will explain a little bit more about call to action examples in particular. And then heat maps are another great way to do user testing. And this resource from Hotjar talks about the different types of tests that heat maps can be used for and what they're going to tell you about your website if you do those types of tests. These are four particular heat map. Some of them do think more than heat maps, but these all do heat maps, which I think is one of the easiest things to use when you're trying to convince a client that something on their website is really not working the way they think it's working. Or if you want to put something up and show them that it's going to work better than what they already have on their website. And most of these have some kind of a free trial or real cheap trial that you can use. And I suggest that you do some of the free trials just to see how valuable this can be in improving local websites. Another thing that can sometimes bring you quick wins is to quickly segment users off of the page. Some businesses their homepages are so cluttered up with stuff that when people land on them, they don't know where to go. So in these, this Invisalign example, it's showing, you know, it's segmenting off providers, it's segmenting off people that may be looking for providers, and it may be, and it's segmenting off people that may want to become an Invisalign provider. So it gets them where they want to go very quickly. Same thing is true with this yoga website that segments people very quickly, and this neurological practice website that segments off existing patients, new patients, and providers that might be wanting to provide referrals. Also, consider improving the prominence of your location finder. Sears, for example, has this tiny little link up at the top left of their homepage. It's on all their pages this way, about the store locator. Not very helpful if you're looking for a Sears store, that you have to look around on that page to find that tiny little link up at the very top. This quilting machine business, Gammel, they know that their dealers are the ones that sell these products. They're the ones that are going to make that final sale. So they really make the dealer locator a prominent part of their site and their navigation. And this is what I think a lot of local businesses, especially big brands, are failing to do. Think about getting a Google Business Suite. These stats are for hospitality businesses, and you can see why they are so stunning for hospitality businesses, because of course we all want to look inside a hotel or a restaurant before we go there. But these are also extremely valuable for other businesses. I might want to see that your medical practice is clean and neat inside. I might want to see what kind of toys you have in your toy store. Let people see inside your stores and think about getting one of these virtual tours. And in some places, they appear to be rather expensive, but in other places, they're dirt cheap. I just got a quote on some virtual tours for a medical office in an area close to Fort Worth. And I was shocked at how cheap, like under $400, that I could get a virtual tour of this medical practice. And a few of them were even willing to throw in some still shots and that sort of thing. So think about getting a Google Business Suite and not just using it on your Google My Business listing, but also putting it on your website so that visitors to your website can tour your business as well. And when I was researching this, I ran across something that I haven't tried yet, but I think is definitely worth trying. There are now apps for both the iPhone and Android phones that are going to let you create phone photo spheres with the Street View app. And there's some more information about this on Google. And these are, you know, the very simple instructions on how to actually create one of these virtual tours yourself. So if you're in an agency, you might want to think about getting somebody who can do this in your agency and doing these phone photo spheres or virtual business tours for many, many, many different types of businesses. And I think this is my last slide. You want to repurpose your content. If you've gone through the trouble to do some, to create some content, think about different ways you can use it. This is an example of a little video recording that Mike Blumenthal and I do most Monday mornings called Last Week in Local. And we started doing it for the people that belong to our Local U Forum. But then we take a piece of it and we repurpose it into a shorter video that goes onto our blog as a blog post. And we also get it transcribed into a text version that we can use in that blog post. So think about the different ways that you can take one effort at content creation and repurpose it over and over again and use it in different ways and in different places. And now we're ready for some questions, Casey.
All right. That's always great to hear. Everyone hear me okay? Have it on off mute. We've got a lot of good ones here. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and just jump right into those today. The first one, I know King has a lot of questions here. His question is, I have 20 photos. Would it be better to have two pages with 10 photos each with text, of course, on the photos, or maybe split those up even more? What do you think about that, Mary?
You know, to me, the number of photos on the page is less important than whether the photos are optimized or not. Because I see so many beautiful galleries of beautiful photos and there's no captions, there's no story behind it. There just is, you know, they're just totally unoptimized. So I don't think it really matters whether you have 10 or 20 photos on the page, but tell the story behind those photos in text form on the page, which is going to help you to rank better and is also going to be much more useful to people that are actually looking at those photos.
Awesome. Very good point. I went ahead and advanced back your presentation to the structured markup slide because Ron has a good question here, and his question is, can you please talk about the elements on the use structured markup slide, where each element on the slide comes from, what structured markup elements are represented? Is that something that you can speak to a little bit about?
Sure. So the reservations markup that's on the Jones restaurant, that is an action schema. And this is something that's going to become more and more important to all of us. It could be used for a lot of different things. Right now, it's mostly being used by really big sites like OpenTable because they have the developers behind them to do it, whereas a lot of small local businesses don't have those resources. But Action Markup is going to let you take reservations, make appointments, and that sort of thing. The menu markup for Jones Restaurant is just marking up your own menu on your own site in schema. This movie markup, there's actually some rich cards that are coming out about movies that kind of enhance some of this schema markup. But this is basically an event, these show times. And the estate sales down in the other one are also event markups. And one thing that I think people don't realize about this event markup and action markup is how Google is starting to integrate this markup into some of the other things that they do. For example, if you have event markup on your site and somebody's using a Google Calendar, you can put markup on your site that will let them add your event to their Google Calendar. And then if depending on what kind of apps they're using and how they use their phone, they could get calendar reminders from Google of when your event is going to be. Same thing with the action markup. You've probably seen it when you make a hotel reservation that you get an email about that reservation. Same thing's happening with phones. And then you're getting information. You're getting Google Now cards later saying, don't forget to leave for your flight at the airport on time. So there's a lot of markup out there, and it's growing, and it's going to be working together with a lot of different applications as we move forward.
Very good. And I provided a link. I hope all of you can see that. It's actually the developer resource from Google that covers all of these markups. And there's a specific detailed section on there about the local schema that you should all review on the call if this is new to you. So check that out. Kind of talks into it, goes into detail about how you can enable your knowledge panel and other attributes like that. Things like breadcrumb navigation, understanding where exactly to put the schema. So that should be there, and you should see that. Crystal, make sure everyone can see that, but I can see it, so hopefully everyone else that. And it's in the Q&A section there. And I don't believe that there is. I believe that everyone should see that. So if not, let us know. Okay, so continuing down here, let's talk a little bit about. I've got a question here from Cheryl. Or let's see here. Let's find some here. Cindy's got a good question here. Cindy, always a pleasure to talk to you. Does the local algo take semantic keywords and language into consideration, or is that just not as up to date as the search algo? Is that something you can speak to, Mary?
So the local algo, I think what you might be referring to is strictly maps. Yes, it does take it into account. And you can see that if you go to Mike Blumenthal's site and look at some of the experiments that he did regarding forcing rankings at Yelp by putting specific terms in reviews at Yelp, you'll see that that is very, very true. We did it one experiment where we every a bunch of people who are trusted Yelp reviewers put the term dive bar into reviews for a particular bar, and within days, Google started ranking that page and that business for dive bars.
Hey, that sends a lot of traffic. I only go to dive bars. That's just me. Okay, so let's continue on here. I know Philip had another question about the Google Business Suite. There's actually a link for that, so I'll go ahead and paste that over here for him. And do you have anything else you want to speak to about that? I actually set up a photo shoot. It was very easy to do for our law firm, the Milner & Markey LLP practice. And again, same thing. It was about $250. That was for the whole office. It looks great. There's a very increased profile for that. It's definitely well worth doing. Fantastic investment. Here is all the
Yeah.
information on that. So take a look when you guys get a chance.
Yeah, just go to that page, go to your location. It'll give you a list of people and just start emailing or calling them, telling them what you need, and they'll send you quotes.
All right, so let's continue on down with the questions here. Kate has got a comment here. I already hear clients and designers complaining about writing lots of text on their homepage. How do you overcome those arguments?
So the only way I have found to overcome those arguments is one, let them own what happens above the fold. Because that's going to make their eyes happy when the homepage pops up and they see that it's all clean and slick and beautiful the way they wanted to design it. And then put your content down below the fold. And just keep going with it for as long as you need to.
Yeah, and now, Mary, let me just interject real quick here. Have you heard anything about the next mobile friendly update, the next mobile usability update that Gary Iles briefly talked about at what was it, Search Summit Sydney? It was also covered again at Big Digital Adelaide. He said that there's something else coming down the pipeline, preferably at the end of summer, possibly more mobile speed focused. Is that something you have any information on?
No, I actually learned that from you on the mastermind call the other day.
Oh, okay. All right, so
But
we if you
it
guys
makes
have
perfect sense, doesn't
yeah.
it? I
Yeah,
mean,
because they're using
yeah.
they've been using desktop signals forever. It only makes sense that they'd finally, update that and, give those of you on the call or everywhere who've been focusing specifically on mobile factors some kind of a benefit from that. So that doesn't surprise me at all. Unfortunately, that's about all the information I have. So when we do have more information, or if you haven't had the chance to listen to the mastermind call that we had earlier this week, Lots of information on there, and I would urge you to do that. Okay, so let's continue to do there. I know King has a lot of questions here. I don't think that we're going to get to those, King. So if you want, you can just send a fast answer question because a lot of those are very basic questions that would be better if I just detailed an answer to you in fast answer. So I would urge you to do that. When we talk about things like markup, though, what is the best tool for making structured markup? That's a little bit more complicated because structured markup can be done through automated tools. Or it can be done basically through simple coding. You first have to decide what kind of schemas you need to focus on. So make sure that you can access Fast Answer and we can go over detail, what schemas you should be focusing on, which would be appropriate for your page, and I can provide you some link to some tools, free tools that will allow you to code that stuff pretty fast for you. If he doesn't know how to access Fast Answer, Crystal, just send him over the link, please.
Yeah, and I think it's becoming pretty evident that we all should just bite the bullet and go to JSON DL
Oh,
way
absolutely.
of managing our schema. And Darren Shaw's website, whitespark.ca, his blog recently had a good post about implementing JSON DL on local business sites. I'll see if I can find that and post it up here.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. There is only a couple of these JSON schema generators. You should make a note of them. One of them is by JD Flynn, who's a pretty well-known web developer. I'm going to go ahead and paste that over. That is something you should be aware of. When we talk about JSON, that's really where Google wants everyone to go. Mary mentioned previously how the new rich cards have been pushed out by Google, and right now the rich card functionality is only open to two specific niches, and that's movies and recipes. And in both examples, if you were to go to rich cards under the Google Help resources, the sample code they use is all JSON. It's not microdata or any of that. It's not micro format based at all. So if you haven't moved to this type of rich card optimization yet, definitely work with what they're showing you as the example, which is JSON. Now the problem is that right now there's very few, there's pretty much only one JSON markup plugin for WordPress specifically, and nothing that works in the recipe niche. So you've got all these plugins that are, again, recipes are very important, especially in the recipe niche where they've got to mark those up for Google to pull that data into the rich cards. And there's no plugins at all that do anything with JSON. So honestly, if anyone is on the call as a developer, the first one of you who's going to come to market with a recipe plugin that uses JSON is going to have a lot of success because I'm going to personally move about 150 blocks to it immediately. Because that's how big of a deal it is. But yeah, we've provided some information on that, and we also have some, check out this JSON generator. It's one of several, and we'll go from there. Okay, I think that's all the questions we have today. As always, Mary, fantastic job. Always a pleasure to be with you on this call. And if anyone else has any questions, please avail yourself of Fast Answer or use the Mastermind chat. Mary and I are both in there at all the time. And on that note, Mary, thanks again so much.
Thank you.
And we'll see all of you next month. We've got a really exciting presentation planned with Christine. Is it Schlesinger? Can you pronounce that for me? I always screw up her last name, Mary. She's the, you probably know her. She's at PubCon all the time. But she's going to have a presentation on site auditing that should be really well received. So we'll
Oh,
have the
nice.
full details on that probably next week, and that should be well received. She does a really good job. She's very well known in the industry. So on that note, you guys have a fantastic weekend. This will all be live within 24 hours so that you can review it at your convenience, and we'll talk to all of you again next month. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.